AM W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packard. The death toll from U.S. retaliatory airstrikes has been updated to 16 in Iraq and 29 in Syria, according to officials there.
The strikes, retaliation for the drone attack that killed three U.S. service members at Tower 22 in northeastern Jordan on January 28th. The reservist bodies returned to the U.S. Friday in a solemn ceremony attended by President Biden and Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, the three service members, part of the Army's 718th Engineer Company.
ABC's Marcus Moore. President Biden looking for an easy victory in South Carolina, which is holding the first Democratic primary in the presidential election season today. Preparations are being made in Southern California today for more torrential rain. 40 million people are under a flood watch, with a strong atmospheric river moving into Southern California tonight and lasting through Tuesday. Numbers Friday from the Labor Department show employers beating expectations to add 353,000 new jobs last month. This is ABC News. The investigation is underway into this week's collapse of a hangar that was being built at the airport in Boise, Idaho. Three construction workers were killed, nine more people were injured, five critically.
What made the aircraft hangar, which was under construction, come down, metal bending and folding as it caved in on itself, is not yet clear. OSHA is leading the investigation. Boise Fire Chief Mark Niemeyer says his airport firefighters happened to have been training close by when the building collapsed, and they were on scene almost immediately.
Our crews are always training for the unpredictable, and Wednesday was unpredictable.
Boise's head of EMS says it was taxing on their system as calls were made for numerous ambulances. Alex Stone, ABC News.
It's been a year since that toxic train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio. Norfolk Southern and the EPA have taken 45,000 samples. No readings or results for the contaminants have been found above actionable levels. President Biden, who's slated to visit later this month, is being urged by many in the region to declare a federal disaster. Dave Packer, ABC News.
It's Fully Leaded Education Talk. Busted Pencils with Dr. Tim and Dr. Johnny, weeknights at 7 on the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH, and on the Civic Media app.
Max Inc. Radio invites you to a live concert each week over the radio. It's Live in the Lair on Max Inc. Saturday night. It's a full hour of live music and in-depth interviews with the artists. Listen across Civic Media every Saturday at 9 p.m. and grab the podcast at maxincradio.com. Live in the Lair, presented by the Aaron Weber Group at movetomadison.com. Max Inc. on Civic Media. We are local music.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair. Weekdays 10 till noon on the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH, and on the Civic Media app. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Artificial intelligence could be used to meddle in this year's elections. As Eric Tegedoff reports, it could cause voters to mistrust all information, even the truth.
Before the New Hampshire primary, a robocall imitating President Joe Biden called voters and told them not to vote. It's seen as a potential preview of what voters could be in for as the 2024 general election approaches. Rachel Ori is the Senior Associate Director of the Bipartisan Policy Center's Elections Project. She says AI could have other consequences.
Our bigger concern is what's known as a liar's dividend, that the presence of false information makes voters trust any information less.
Ori says the past few years have seen a near constant assault on accurate voting information, which has made it challenging for good information to reach voters. Ori says AI could supercharge the misinformation campaigns that have existed for years. However, election officials across the country have a leg up going into the 2024 vote.
Election officials and voting advocates around the country are sort of well prepared to mitigate and respond to increases in misinformation because they've spent the last couple of years flexing that muscle and learning how to respond to misinformation and election denial campaigns.
Ori says election officials should have a plan ready to respond to AI misinformation campaigns. She says there likely aren't any regulatory options available at the moment to stop these operations.
Technology is maybe growing faster than the regulatory tools we have available. So at present, it seems difficult to find a policy that the government could adopt and make these robocalls impossible.
Ori says another concern is targeted campaigns that use a voter's personal information to persuade them not to vote, although there aren't any documented instances of this happening yet. I'm Eric Tegedoff. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Hey, everybody, this is Aaron from the Todd Allbaugh Show, just letting you know that Todd will be back on Monday with a brand new show. So tune in then from noon to 2.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. It's your hometown radio, refreshed.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. More and more sun as the day goes along. Today, we'll see a high near 42 degrees. For tonight, some patchy fog again. Otherwise, a low near 21. For Sunday, some patchy fog to start the day, then mostly sunny with highs in the mid-40s. For Monday, partly sunny and a high near 47.
It's 30 at our studios.
From Birchwood to Poplar, this is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH, your home for news, talk, and sports.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
If you're tired of one-sided conversations and mean-spirited rhetoric, it's time to listen and engage. This is The Rational Revolution, a look at today's issues through a politically purple lens. Now, here's your host, Chris Elfheim.
Hey, 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 welcome to The Rational Revolution, where we do our darndest to just have some civilized conversations about topics that affect our kitchen tables, whether we realize it or not. With me, I have my favorite conservative alderman, Mr. Dean Rash. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm great. It's been another week. Anything exciting?
Yeah, I had a vanilla beer, and it tastes like vanilla. Is that exciting? You're not responding.
That was my statement.
Well, I didn't know why you caught me off guard with the question. I don't know.
Oh, just live a little. That's it. That's the most exciting thing that happened. You just had a vanilla stout.
It was really good, vanilla stout.
Well, good. I'm glad. Have another one later.
Maybe it tastes like vanilla. I still got like an aftertaste of vanilla. It's really refreshing.
I decided to get a new tattoo.
Oh, what'd you get?
I haven't gotten it yet scheduled, but I'm going to add to my floral arrange along with the Sword of Justice, I've decided.
Sword of Justice.
To represent the little political gig that seems to be developing here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah?
Okay. I'm not sure how to respond to that. I did my taxes. Is that
Uncle
exciting?
Sam thanks you. And so does your city.
My city. Oh, that's a great segue into this conversation.
It sure is. Today, joining us as our guest, the first half of the show, we have a couple of them today, but in the first half, we have Mayor James Boyd here with us from the city of De Pere. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Dean.
Love it. We love having mayors on the show. We had Mayor Jake from Appleton a couple of weeks ago, and now we have you from De Pere. I mean, we're just making the rounds.
That's great. I'm glad I'm here.
That's awesome.
Now, Chris, did you know a little known fact about James?
I want to know this little known fact about James.
He's actually more popular in this area than Taylor Swift.
Okay. Okay. I probably believe that.
It hasn't been proven yet.
My daughters will disagree with that, but that's fine.
I am so tired of hearing about Taylor Swift. Actually, I feel bad for Taylor Swift because all she's doing is showing up to a football game. It's everybody else that keeps talking about it.
Absolutely.
I mean, come on. What'd the lady do to you, Dean?
Nothing?
Well,
he's more popular. Mm-hmm. I'm not disparaging Taylor Swift.
All right. So the reason we have Mayor Boyd here with us is we want to bring up a topic that really does affect everybody in the state.
Absolutely.
There's a Senate bill floating right now, Senate Bill 691, which is honestly going without any attention from the public. I actually Googled Wisconsin SB 691 and hit the news tab. Nothing.
Correct.
There's nothing. It has not been reported at all. And yet, it's kind of a big deal. So this is a bill that deals with water and sewer and cities and towns. And so, Mayor, if you can help us out, just give us a little rundown of what's being proposed and how you feel about it.
Sure. Part of the reason it's probably not really well known now is that it just had a public hearing. So it's a pretty new bill in its infant stage. It's only at the Senate level now, though the Assembly may take it up. So they had a public hearing a couple of weeks ago to discuss the bill. Let's just kind of back up a little bit. In Wisconsin, we have towns, villages, cities, and counties. Those are municipal bodies that we have. There are about, I'm trying to get this right here, about 200 cities in Wisconsin, 400 villages, and about 1,200 towns. So a lot more towns than the others, but population-wise, obviously cities and towns are bigger. And each of these municipalities have different representation at the state level. The cities and villages have an organization called the League of Municipalities that represent their interest. Counties have their own organization. School districts have their own organization, and so too do towns. So we all kind of behave independently. For the most part, towns, villages, and cities, get along quite well, and they behave, and we have certain rules that we must follow. For example, cities have to incorporate their corporations. They're just like businesses. Towns do not have to do that. Villages, some do, some don't, but by and large, they do. In our immediate area, we have just very few cities and a lot of towns and villages. So for whatever reason, the town association decided that some of the towns needed some tweaks or changes to the rules that they previously lived by. And hence we have this bill called SB 691, which is commonly called the Urban Towns Bill. So basically it designates towns an urban area. And if the bill would somehow make its way through and pass and become law, would give the towns the same designation as a corporated village or a city. It may not sound like much, but it's really a big deal. Cities, when they incorporate, have to provide certain services to its residents, police, fire, sewer, water, etc. And that comes at a very large cost.
Mm-hmm.
Towns are much smaller and they don't have to do that. Villages, some choose to, some do not to. In De Pere, for example, we have three neighboring towns. We have Ledgeview, Lawrence, and Rockland. And then we have two villages. We have Ashwaubenon and Alloway. So the towns, I think Ledgeview right now has probably 6,000 people. I think Lawrence has about 6,000 people. Mm-hmm. And then I'm thinking Rockland has just under 3,000.
I think the last number I heard was like 2,500.
2,500, so. Yeah. So under this bill, it would give any town that is over 5,000 people this new special classification, an urban town, which would give them the ability, which they didn't have before, to mandate the cities or villages automatic connection to their sewer and water. Well, right now, Ledgeview and Lawrence are part of the Central Brown County Water Authority. So this is one good thing. So this part doesn't affect our bill. They, along with five other municipalities, including De Pere and Bellevue and Alloway, get their water from Manitowoc through a lake, through Lake Michigan, through a pipeline that was put in place 15 years ago at an enormous cost. The city of De Pere and these municipalities had to pay a lot of money to get a pipeline in place and then infrastructure within their communities to get water pumped from Manitowoc, from Lake Michigan to our municipalities. Tens of millions of dollars.
I was going to say, when you say a lot, it's millions and millions. Tens. And millions and millions.
Tens of millions of dollars.
So much money.
Yeah, so just this one pipe that comes from Manitowoc, it goes to Ledgeview on the top of the ledge. That's the main pump station, and then it pumps it out. Lots and lots of money. So under this bill, for whatever crazy reason, and we'll go back to as to how, you know, this whole thing started, under this bill, it would basically give the towns that are above 5,000, again, it wouldn't include Rockland right now because they're 2,700, and it wouldn't include Lawrence and Ledgeview because they're already part of the Central Brown County Water Authority, but other towns the ability get mandatory connection for water and sewer from the cities or villages. Mandatory connection, which means they would still pay for their water, but they would, under this law, we would be required to allow them in and they wouldn't have to pay for any of the services prior to when they connect.
Right. So let's just put that in perspective again, that we're talking about from the De Pere perspective, but this is statewide.
Statewide?
This
correct.
Is, if it goes across the state, you know, the bottom line is, this is how much you pay for water. Because those dollars have to come. So I just sat through a finance meeting last week or week before, and I know there were probably five items on the finance committee list that totaled, I believe, $8 million just in maintenance things that we do. I mean, it is so much money that our cities pay for water in and water out.
And I think that's one of the struggles with this.
And that's just the maintenance. Right. We're not rebuilding, right? Right? Mm-hmm. So all of that comes through in the how much we pay for our water. Mm-hmm. So Is it really fair that those of us that have been paying all along, maybe the taxpayers who helped put that all up, are now paying what, the same? Or is their theory that we spread it out? No, because you have to build the infrastructure.
Right. You have to. And let's take it even further. Denmark is the newest member of the Central Brown County Water Authority. Again, we're just this area. Other areas have their own authorities and ways of getting water. Denmark was just added last year.
Okay.
For them to come in, Denmark, the village of Denmark, for them to come in, they had to sign an agreement that they'd pay X amount of dollars to pay for what they didn't pay for when it was put in.
Right.
And this is just how you work. This is how These things normally work.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we can spread that out and everyone pays their fair share. But under this bill, that wouldn't happen anymore. It would be automatic mandatory connection once they reach 5,000. So let's just take the water portion. Now, again, water is the most important thing that, I think cities provide and villages provide. And we need water to survive. It's so important. I emphasize, I go to schools, we just take that for granted, but it's really a big deal. So let's just take that one portion of the bill. So that obviously we think is very unfair, and it's not just the city of De Pere or city of Appleton. The same would be for Alloway and Bellevue. Yeah. They belong to the Central Brown County Water Authority. They're as up in arms about this as anyone else is.
Well, and they're not alone. I mean, I looked up on who's been lobbying for it and opposed. We have the city of Madison, Dane County Cities and Villages, League of Wisconsin Municipalities, municipal environmental groups, that's sewer and water, the Wisconsin Builders Association, the Wisconsin Economic Development Association, and the Wisconsin Realtors are all against this bill.
Absolutely.
All of the
and
one group,
be.
There's one lobbying group that put opinions in for it. It's the Wisconsin Town Association.
Right. And the Realtors and the Building Association are two very, very components to this.
Yeah.
So once they got involved and they were against it, and I'll give you an update right now where it is in just a bit, a few minutes as to where it stands right now. But it's totally unfair. But here's the other part of it. The towns around here weren't really asking for it, as far as I know, from the best I can tell in talking to some of the towns around here. So, the origin of it, we're still trying to figure it out. But the towns association is quite powerful, and they have needs and wants like everyone else.
Sure.
But the way we satisfied these were through, municipal agreements and ways we could figure it out.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, we have very good agreements and we're in good standing with all of our towns.
Yeah. I know Appleton is the same way.
We
provide the water for multiple towns, but there's appropriate ways to do that.
There is.
So that
and we didn't even talk
shared.
About sewer, but sewer is a whole different thing, but that's also a big deal as well. Either way, very big cost.
What about the annexing?
Sure. So the next component of this bill is the annexation portion of it and extraterritorial and plat zoning review. So right now, for example, Dean's on the Plan Commission. If someone from Ledgeview or Rockland or Lawrence wants to build a subdivision or a business wants to add in, we get review of that under the current terms of the agreements with towns, villages, and cities.
Mm-hmm.
So we can review any plat or extraterritorial zoning review for anything coming in. If this bill goes through, that goes away. So they can pretty much do whatever they want. In other words, you build a city, a town, and village based on looking forward, and you're trying to do smart planning. So when you put these, subdivisions and businesses together, that's what we do together. That would go away.
I think there's plenty of reasons to question the validity of the bill, but we're also going to talk about on the backside why it, what the impact to those towns in. We're going to head into a break, but when we come back, I want to talk about that again, the zoning and, if you're living in a small town, how you might see this situation differently and see what is it they're trying to accomplish, and maybe we can help them in another way other than this bill.
Right.
Again, this is the Rational Revolution, having a great conversation about SB 691. It's water, it's sewer, we all have it. We might as well learn about it. Come on back to the Rational Revolution.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's Home, for Matt Flynn Direct.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
The story of Black History Month starts in Chicago. It's 1915 and thousands are there to celebrate. 50 years since the Emancipation Proclamation and the end of slavery. The gathering also inspires civic organizations to uncover the many achievements of Black citizens. By 1926, the celebration of African American history is official. This also is a time for rising racial pride. The Black middle class is expanding, and industrial cities like Milwaukee are luring African Americans with good jobs. There's so much more to tell you. Listen for the next Black History Month story here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You know you want a revolution of the rational kind. You know, back when we could sit around a table, have a vanilla stout, and maybe talk a little politics and have some differing opinions.
Yeah.
This is kind of what everybody says. Let's get back to the way it used to be. Well, this is what we try to do here. So today we got a couple different things going on. Our first conversation, we're dealing with this water and sewer bill. We have a guest, Mayor James Boyd from De Pere with us, along with my favorite conservative, Mr. Dean Rash. That's always exciting.
I don't know why the hesitation there.
I don't know.
Makes me uncomfortable.
You do that to me.
Back to counseling.
So we've got one more segment here. We've got a great segment to finish up. We're going to talk more on this SB 691, which is water and sewer bill, which does affect everyone. I don't care what side of the corner of the state you're on. This affects you. And then don't forget the second half of our show. We have a special guest. We have Kaz O'Shea joining us, and I'll tell you more about her later. All right, Mayor James, back to you. Let's talk about this bill. We left off saying that it was not only that these small urban, under quotes, towns would have the ability to mandate or force the cities to bring the water and the water infrastructure to them and have access to it, but it left the cities on the hook for the bill to do so. And then there's more, but wait, there's more. It has to do with annexing and zoning. So go into that a little bit. What does that mean?
Yeah, you know, I mean, right now, we have something called smart planning. So when a town, village, or city wants to expand, for example, let's take Ashwaubenon. Ashwaubenon is a closed city right now. So basically, whatever they have within their borders, that's what they have. The only way they can grow is most likely by annexation. Someone's got a petition to come into Ashwaubenon, which is very difficult because they're surrounded by, you know, cities. And I think they have a town right nearby where someone could petition in, but it sounds like they're not going to go anywhere anytime too soon. So let's just take annexation. So we'll take Rockland, for example. Let's just say there's a big piece of property in Rockland adjacent to De Pere, and it's connected, it's contiguous to De Pere, and this big property owner wants to come into De Pere. For whatever reason, they want to sell their property, make a profit, and then they see the city as the best chance to make the most money. And then whoever's going to do the subdivision can make a lot of cash on the parcels. Well, in a town, the parcels, based on zoning requirements, are a certain size. I don't know if it's 1 or 2 acres.
I think it's one.
Minimum of one. But cities' requirements are much different than that. We want smaller lot sizes so you can compress
density,
it and
yeah.
density, et cetera, et cetera. So that's one of the reasons someone will want to come in, you know, make a good buck, or someone that wants to do a subdivision, convince them now's the time to sell. The city, the price is pretty good. You know, they want to go in. If someone petitions, say it's a farmer or someone else that owns land for annexation to come into the city of De Pere, it's a fairly straightforward process. We don't approach people. They come to us.
Okay.
Once they start the conversation, this is the same with Appleton, anyone else. Once the conversation started, we started the conversation, which we just, you know, we annexed some property in Lawrence and someone mm-hmm. came our way and I think we brought in 20 acres. And then you settle on price and, you know, we barter back and forth and whatever, whatever. Under the previous guise of how the law worked, if someone petitioned annex to come in, basically they come in. There's no other real approval at the town level. It just pretty much for the most part gets done. Unless the city says, no, we don't need you. We can't afford the price. We have no need for this whatsoever. Under the new bill, SB 691, the Urban Towns Bill, you would now need unanimous approval by the town for a petitioner to come into the city.
And by unanimous, it would be the town board.
I believe we're the town board.
The way I read it was the town board.
The town board, right?
Which is interesting because really it's put up as a defense mechanism then, so they don't lose their land base.
100%.
And you can kind of understand why, right?
I get that.
I mean, they have their own bills that they're trying to pay, right? And again, they're not maybe the same as the cities, but they have responsibilities. And if little by little their land is going away, that means it's decreasing their revenue. Right.
But we hit that. It's little by little, most often it's in increments that really don't affect them greatly. Of course it will. You know, they have their needs and wants and they want it. But this is why you manage things. And this is why the laws that have been in play for, you know, decades generally work.
Yeah.
It just happens sporadically. Now in De Pere right now, you know, we have obviously the Southern Bridge Corridor coming in, which you're going to see a great deal of potentially interest to come into the city because there's different services the city provides.
Right.
And again, we will not, you know, raid anyone or have, you know, urge someone to come in. They have to come our way, but that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, that would definitely dampen that. That would change things considerably. Let's just take the Southern Bridge Corridor if this bill goes through and this annexation law of unanimous approval goes through. So that's another component.
Yeah, and I think the interesting part about it too is the valuation of that property greatly increases under the city guys because of the services that are provided.
Right.
The people that own the land, they do appreciate and understand that the way to get that, like you mentioned earlier, the way to really truly get value out of their property is to bring it into the city because of some of the things that we can provide, the services we provide, the size of the lots they can work with, things like that, where the town doesn't necessarily have that ability to do that. So I get the economic side of it, but I still don't understand how this bill got to this point and who's driving it.
Right. And that's the most difficult part, because it didn't seem like there was something broken, at least badly, that required this, you know, we'll call it a radical bill that got a hearing. Fortunately, it's not on the floor right now and there's no pending vote, which is a good thing. But we don't know where that came from. But that's not uncommon. You know, the towns will bring in their wishes as well to their senators and their assembly persons.
Well, sure.
So that's not uncommon. This is a big one. We'll consider this a nuclear bill.
Yeah.
So generally you have incremental bills. We'll get to this point that you change exterritorial plat, zoning review, you know, whatever it is, but nothing like this.
Yeah.
So it's almost like they did it the wrong way. Let's just throw this out here. And I think they're looking for the Builders Association, the Realtors Association to get on their side. If you lose those two, that's pretty much about it.
Yeah,
you can't lose those two.
And they've already voted down. I mean, they've already put up their information.
And here's my question on that too, is if that bill goes through as written, which we're hoping it doesn't, does that stifle growth and economic development in our communities?
According to the Wisconsin Economic Development, the answer is yes.
Yes,
absolutely.
100% yes.
So we'll actually run backwards in the state if something like this happens.
Yeah, and I can give a brief update if you want me right now.
Sure.
So I think I've covered most of it, but my sources in Madison right now pretty much say that this is it is done. So I'm going to say it's 95% not going to go forward. And that's really good news.
That's good news. Is any of this... again, you can't seem to find out, but is there any reason that it would be towns that are dealing with a water issue? I mean, there are a lot of conversations about groundwater and wells and contamination and PFAS and all of this stuff. And obviously, a healthy water system, you know, is a way to avoid that. Is that part of the problem, do you think?
It might have been part of the impetus, but if that's the case, then bring a bill forward that deals with water
and
then leave the rest out. So there had to be more than just that, but... again, we're looking in our area right here. The only town near De Pere would be Rockland. And they're at 2,700, whatever it is. So they're a long ways away from 5,000. You have to hit 5,000 for this to trigger under this bill, which again is another odd thing because the vast majority are under 5,000. So and many of them are far away from 5,000. Mm-hmm. So it didn't make a lot of sense for all this angst for something like this. And again, like I said, we have great relationship with our surrounding towns.
Yeah. I know Apple's in the same way. I think it's interesting. And if we could ever track down the root cause,
tell me.
It makes me think that revenue sharing is part of the deal, right? I mean, all towns, villages, cities, we're all struggling with the dollars to make sure we provide the more and more necessary.
Yep.
And maybe towns are in the same situation. And if they've got a shrinking base, it's getting even harder.
Yeah, that may be part of it. They didn't get anything. They didn't get what they thought they would get this last cycle.
Yeah.
And that very well could be.
That's a good point.
We'll keep having this conversation. Mayor James Boyd, thank you so much for being here. We look forward to having you on again. We're heading into a break. On the flip side, we are going to come back with my new favorite, Kaz O'Shea. Your name is not Kaz O'Shea. It doesn't ring like that.
Come on back.
hometown station for news, talk, and sports. This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packard. The death toll from U.S. retaliatory airstrikes has been updated to 16 in Iraq and 29 in Syria, according to officials there.
The strikes, retaliation for the drone attack that killed three U.S. service members at Tower 22 in northeastern Jordan on January 28th. The reservist bodies returned to the U.S. Friday in a solemn ceremony attended by President Biden and Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, the three service members, part of the Army's 718th Engineer Company.
ABC's Marcus Moore. President Biden looking for an easy victory in South Carolina, which is holding the first Democratic primary in the presidential election season today. Preparations are being made in Southern California today for more torrential rain. 40 million people are under a flood watch, with a strong atmospheric river moving into Southern California tonight and lasting through Tuesday. Numbers Friday from the Labor Department show employers beating expectations to add 353,000 new jobs last month. This is ABC News.
The Badgers hope to rebound. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. In men's college basketball, the number 6th-ranked Wisconsin Badgers lost Thursday night to Nebraska 80-72 in overtime. Matt LePay with the call on the Badgers radio network.
Hepburn with 7 seconds left. Chucky, a deep three. It's off the rim, no good. Gary the rebound, and Nebraska wins it in overtime by 8. And another court storm here in Lincoln as the 6th-ranked team in the country goes down.
Now, Wisconsin has a chance to hold on to that spot in the top 10 when they host the number 2-ranked Purdue Boilermakers Sunday at noon. Head coach Greg Gard asked, will his team need to cut down on the turnovers against Purdue?
Yeah, that combined with bad shot selection and no play in the paint. You know, we don't get to the free throw line, and we aren't going to get fouled when you're consistently shooting jump shots.
That's the Badgers head basketball coach Greg Gard. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. More and more sun as the day goes along. Today, we'll see a high near 42 degrees. For tonight, some patchy fog again. Otherwise, a low near 21. For Sunday, some patchy fog to start the day, then mostly sunny with highs in the mid-40s. For Monday, partly sunny and a high near 47.
It's 30 at our studios.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
You cannot talk about Black history without including some of the early music and art which flourished in the 1920s and 30s. Time now called the Harlem Renaissance. But this new Black cultural identity was growing everywhere. Trumpet player Louis Armstrong moved to Chicago. Painter Henry Tanner was accepted into the Academy of Design. Musician Robert Johnson recorded the Delta Blues in Texas. Listen for another Black History story right here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
The story of Black History Month starts in Chicago. It's 1915 and thousands are there to celebrate. 50 years since the Emancipation Proclamation and the end of slavery. The gathering also inspires civic organizations to uncover the many achievements of Black citizens. By 1926, the celebration of African American history is official. This also is a time for rising racial pride. The Black middle class is expanding, and industrial cities like Milwaukee are luring African Americans with good jobs. There's so much more to tell you. Listen for the next Black History Month story here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
Hayward's choice for news, talk, and sports. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Rational Revolution. We hope you're having a good weekend. We are as well. We just got done talking with Mayor James Boyd from De Pere, along with my friend Alderman Dean Rash, here about the water and sewer bill coming through that doesn't seem to have a whole lot of traction, and thank God for that. Sounds like it wasn't a very good deal.
That was a really good conversation.
It was, but I think it leads to a little bit more conversation on water and kind of the difference in rural and cities, and we're going to join in the conversation today. I'm very excited to have a guest. Can I say Ms.?
You certainly can.
Ms. Kaz O'Shea, formerly of Star 95 in Milwaukee. Welcome to the gig.
I got to tell you, that music, that intro music is fabulous.
Fabulous. Pull that on up. There you go. Well, that's awesome. We're excited to have Kaz join us here tonight. And again, we're going to kind of keep the conversation going on water, not so much the bill, but coming out of the last break, we talked about, you know, we don't really know where the bill came from, but we wonder why.
Right.
You know, was it coming from a town that is dealing with bad water? I mean, there's a lot of that going on.
Well, especially up in this area. We see it with the PFAS and then the farm runoffs and things like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about water. And again, the mayor mentioned earlier, water really is the most important thing at this point. Mm-hmm. I don't think people realize the tens of millions of dollars that the cities are spending to keep our water safe.
I was really amazed. I got an education.
Yeah.
I really did. I had no idea that it costs that much money. That
it's amazing.
Surprised me.
And I know Dean knows this as well, mm-hmm. every, you know, finance committee, the bulk of the items that are approved have to do with maintaining or building or improving the water and sewer.
Yep.
How to get it to you safely, and then how to get it back through and, you know, removing all the stuff.
Yeah, and those costs obviously get passed down to the resident, right?
Without
when
question.
When I first moved into the city of De Pere, I think our water bill, our quarterly water bill was $75 a quarter.
Yeah.
And now?
Where now it's $300.
Yeah. And I do know that, you know, water utilities, their goal is not to, nothing run by the government is built to make money.
No.
It's meant to be self-fulfilling at best.
And provide a service
exactly.
that's necessary for
right.
the community to grow.
And some things don't have revenue at all, but those that do, whether it's a parking or it's water, their goal is to recoup their costs
right.
to maintain, not necessarily to be making money. So no water bill is coming in like, ha-ha, the city wants your money again. It doesn't work that way.
No.
That's just how much it costs. But let's talk about water. Kaz, you live out in a more rural community, huh?
I do, and I live in an apartment. So to be honest with you, never having been a homeowner, I don't see those water bills.
No?
Oh.
So for me, this is brand new stuff.
I don't think I had a water bill until I moved to Green Bay in 2006, because everywhere else, we had wells and septics.
Oh. Exactly, and yeah. I've spent a good portion of my life drinking water from wells.
Yeah.
And it was a matter of course. Every year they were tested. And if they didn't pass the test, if there was bacteria or something, you paid a great deal of money to have that cleaned out.
Absolutely. Mm. I grew up in the Wausau area. And I know in the news in the last year and a half, last 2 years, they've got, you know, their wells are testing at a really high level of PFAS. So even the city water, there are issues in it. So I guess the conversation I'd like to have is, you know, what do we feel about this water deal? I mean, if I lived out in the country and I couldn't get clean water out of my well,
what do you do?
What do you do? Right. So you kind of have to feel, you have to feel for the people out there. Is the water clean? If the water isn't clean, then what are we doing about it? Because I think that's a big issue, right? I mean, in Madison, I would think if local government, our job is to provide clean water, that's we just said is probably our biggest job.
Right.
Then why in Madison is it not as high a priority?
In terms of infrastructure on that?
No, well, in terms of making sure everybody has availability
clean
of clean water, groundwater.
But I think the community, the cities do that, and that's one of the benefits of living in the cities.
The cities do.
Right.
But the rural,
I think it comes down to a cost situation, you know, and there's, when we look at towns and cities and some of those conversations, they don't always agree on what that cost has to be, or the town maybe can't afford to do it. And I'm thinking that's where some of this bill discussion started.
Yeah.
But at the same time, somebody's got to pay that price. And if you were a resident of Appleton, mm-hmm. and which you are, and Appleton had to raise your taxes 7% so that the neighboring town could get water without having to pay for the infrastructure, I think people would be upset in Appleton.
Oh, I get that. And I think that we all agree that the bill we just talked about is not a good way to fix that.
Correct.
So I guess the bigger conversation is having to do with water.
Right.
And if we agree everyone in the state does deserve the right to good water, mm-hmm. we can't necessarily pipe it out from the cities all over the place without cost share. But I mean, if you drill a well, I mean, again, I grew up in the country. We had a well. We drank out of the well. I mean, we had our own little septic thing in the back. If you can't get down to clean water, is that something that we're okay with in this state?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm not okay with it, but I think at the same time, this is maybe where the state has to step in and do something from a state level to help those communities.
Yes.
I don't know what that looks like.
Well, but I think first we have to be realistic about cleaning things up and letting it out. I mean, we know. In fact, I believe there's a lawsuit. They're trying to do a lawsuit on the PFAS because they basically know where the bulk of the PFAS has come from. It's
right.
been corporations that are actually, you know, they're doing good things. It's all fire retardant type materials, but there's been a lot of it released into the system.
Just and poor containment.
From a corporate standpoint, the corporations don't want to pay the bill to clean it up. But do we agree it needs to be taken care of? So who are we, why are we not just saying, all right, this has got to be done? Maybe the state does kick in at a certain degree, but shouldn't the corporations that put it there be paying to help get it out?
I was just going to say, aren't there fines for these people, these corporations, these big corporations? Aren't there fines?
I don't know. Dean's got a weird look on his face, but that's normal. So
this is the conservative me coming out. I think the struggle sometimes with this, and we'll go to even like cleaning up the river in the Fox River here up in this area.
The dredging.
A lot of those rules back in the day, it was okay to do that. And now we changed the rules. So the struggle for me, for my side, I guess, is the struggle is how do you charge a company for cleanup on something when they were told it was okay by the government before?
That's beside the point, though. It's not okay now.
It's not okay now, but they had stopped the practice. You know, so we're talking about the river here. So that river process stopped of how they put stuff in there, but the damage was already done. So they changed their processes so they complied with the new state laws, but now the damage was already there. So the state told them it was okay back then, but now it's not. So they changed their practice, but now the river is dirty based on past law.
I'll give you that, except
that's the struggle in
without,
my mind.
Without doing any research on this topic, I can assure you that while the old rules were in effect. Mm-hmm. There was plenty of information and efforts coming down the pipe to say, hey, this isn't good. Hey, we should probably not do this. We're going to have to change the rule. And
but
it probably took a decade
right.
because there's
lobbyists.
An awful lot of lobbyists involved saying, don't make us change our ways. And then they finally gave in. So I think that you can't get away from the fact that it must be fixed.
Yeah.
I don't care if you live on a farm in the middle of nowhere or you live downtown. You should have the right to access clean water.
That goes without saying, though. Chris.
And I don't think it's fair. Well, it should. But it is fair to say that the corporations who absolutely at some point in time were aware could be and should be participating in that. Do I think it's fully on them? No,
I
don't.
And I will say that even for the Fox River, the corporations did participate.
They did.
And so I don't know the right answer. I'm saying from the standpoint of, it was allowed. Now it's not allowed. Now what happens?
Yeah.
Right.
My understanding is that the efforts that are being made right now, which tend to come from the blue side of things, very much wants the corporations held accountable. And my understanding is that that entire process is being slowed because there's a date that once that date hits, mm-hmm. then the corporations can no longer be held accountable. And I don't think that's right. I think there should be a compromise that says, all right, you know, we're not going to do it alone, but you can't walk away from it saying, hey, we made our double digit, you know, profits for all these years and don't have any culpability.
Why is it so difficult for these mega corporations that make so much money and profits? Why is it so difficult for them to do the right thing? Everybody.
I'll say this. The problem in corporate America right now is that we sitting here probably own a piece of all the corporations we're talking about.
Right.
Not intentionally, but they're all in our 401ks. They're all in mutual funds.
Right.
And in the end, corporations' only job is not to do what's morally right. It's to do
make
what's
money.
Profitable. It literally says that. in their corporate documents. Their only focus is to be shareholder driven.
Well, sure. If you don't make profit, you don't stay in business.
Right.
And then you can, if you're talking about mega corporation,
right,
you could be putting 20,000, 50,000, 100,000 people out of work.
And there is a reality to, does this affect us? Well, sure.
It does.
I mean, as an example, I know this area, right? So we're in northeastern Wisconsin. P&G is, there's a lot, many shareholders of P&G in this area. Mm-hmm. Wonderful, wonderful company. They've taken care of families, done all these things. If P&G gets smacked with a major, major cleanup, which they're not the issue here, but just as an example, if they got hit with some multi-billion dollar cleanup, that would affect a lot of northeastern Wisconsin people that are literally living on those dividends.
Retirees.
Right?
Yeah,
so
huge.
So as much as we want to do the right thing and we want corporate America to do the right thing, the reality is corporate America is blended and woven through all of our families. So even the most blue of us that argue that things should be done right, as long as we have 401ks, mm-hmm, as long as we are invested in mutual funds, we literally are rooting for the success of corporate America.
Well, if you look at a lot of those,
that's a problem to me.
There's pensions in there too,
yes,
affected by some of those retirees that retired when there was pensions.
Yes.
It could impact them negatively.
Yeah, so
huge.
You know, I guess the point on that is that isn't the end of the story, but you can see how complex it is. It's not as easy as saying, well, they did it, make them do it. They made plenty of money.
Understood.
It, you can hear that, but at the same time, there's a ripple effect that does come down to many kitchen tables of people in Wisconsin. So the balancing act is trying to find what's right and what's equitable. And, you know, if somehow it weren't just a free-for-all, there should be something more to the corporate theory than just bottom line profits. There still should be somehow some connection to doing the right thing.
And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that the people that have the bad water from all these issues have to suffer with it and have to be stuck. I'm just saying it's not that clean of a conversation to fix it, because
clean cut,
it's not as clean cut, you know. So understanding kind of the conservative side of it, to bring that out, it's not a clean cut decision. Yeah. And absolutely nobody wants to drink bad water.
Nobody wants anybody. I shouldn't say that. Most rational people would not want anyone to have bad water.
Correct.
Right? It's just the reality.
You look at, what was the TV, the movie with Aaron Brockovich? I mean, it's called Aaron Brockovich, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolute perfect example. Nobody wants that, because those people impacted that might be family who live in those communities. Yeah. Next thing you know, you got a high rate of childhood cancer because of.
Yeah.
We don't want that. But how do you fix it? That's the tough question.
It is one of those things that, you know, water is one of those things, when you have it, you take it for granted.
Absolutely.
You just do. It's just natural. When it's quality, when it tastes good, when it's an abundantly available resource, you take it for granted. As soon as that source is in danger, whether it be through pollutants or lead pipes or PFAS or whatever, that conversation changes immediately. And well, I guess it's up to us to make sure that across the state, we're not complacent on it, because it may be you next.
Exactly. Right. Think California and the drought that they've been through for the last, 7 years?
At least. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You come to really appreciate that tap when you turn it on and the water comes out.
Or Flint, Michigan.
Flint, Michigan.
Not taking the time to replace all of your underground water lines.
There's more than
like
Flint.
That.
Flint's just the one that
the most popular,
was
the most,
out loud. But I assure you, there are cities, I don't know how many miles are still in Wisconsin cities that have to be dealt with.
Lead pipes.
Milwaukee's got some of that issue too.
Well, and that's something else in the rural areas. You have these family farms that have been around for generations. Now, you can't tell me that these pipes aren't lead. The pipes that are leading from
lead.
This is it. So this is something else that needs to be addressed as well.
They aren't even being identified, right? All right, so we are heading into our final break
here.
I hear Bobby McGee, which I love me some Bobby McGee. We have my friend Dean Rush here, as well as our new friend Kaz O'Shea, formerly of Star 95. Welcome back. And we will be talking after the break a little bit more about water.
Windshield wipers slapping time, I was holding Bobby's hand in mine. We sang every song that Javi knew. Just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing. I mean nothing, honey, if it ain't free.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allball Show.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
You cannot talk about Black history without including some of the early music and art which flourished in the 1920s and 30s. Time now called the Harlem Renaissance. But this new Black cultural identity was growing everywhere. Trumpet player Louis Armstrong moved to Chicago. Painter Henry Tanner was accepted into the Academy of Design. Musician Robert Johnson recorded the Delta Blues in Texas. Listen for another Black History story right here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back. This is Chris from the Rational Revolution. It's a shame we need a revolution to become rational once again, but alas.
I've been rational all my life.
Debatable.
Rational.
Okay. All right.
No time for dad jokes here.
Conrad
liked it. I think Conrad liked it.
Oh, for crying out loud, Conrad.
Conrad, he had to give me a thumbs up.
No, he did not. now he's giving you another signal. That's all right, Conrad. It's okay. I'll
take care of you later. Oh, that wasn't a thumb. Okay, I'm sorry.
Welcome back to Rational Revolution. We truly do try to talk about things that matter to your house, wherever you live across the state, whether you realize it or not. And today our conversation was about water and a bill that's going through, or at least attempting to go through, Madison, that give towns a lot more access to city water without the price tag to go with it.
Correct.
As well as trying to basically get away from the big brother arms of their close by neighbors.
And the annexation piece is huge too on that massive issue.
So there's really two different conversations in there. One has to do with water itself, and one has to do with zoning and powers and revenue.
Correct.
Along with us tonight with Dean and I, we have a guest host. We have Kaz O'Shea with us from the big town of
Milwaukee. Hi, thanks very much for having me. I got to say this one thing before we go any further. You know, my family, I have a very large family, lots of siblings, and there are two rules when we get together, and we don't discuss politics, mm-hmm. and we don't discuss religion. And when I heard about Rational Revolution and the format, I thought, well, how marvelous that I can actually have a conversation with people mm-hmm. without voices getting raised, and I can learn something. I was sitting in the background when the mayor was on, and I was amazed at how much I learned.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's just a really nice feeling to be able to sit down and talk. Most of my friends aren't really up on this, on these kinds of things. And so I'm kind of like in a wasteland. I have no one to talk to about any of these issues.
And you get to hang with a conservative who disagrees.
Well, I'm being nice. I'm being the nice one.
That is our purpose, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and Dean and I, you know, we've known each other for a long time, and we know we don't agree on things. And we're not trying to convince each other,
exactly.
But we want to be able to have a conversation again. It would be nice if we could get back to that. I actually enjoy talking about politics with people that agree or disagree because
I do too. Yeah.
You know what?
Absolutely.
If you can't be at least perplexed by how it works, I don't know. I mean, it's just to me, it's fascinating. And again, to be part of the solution is to be willing to have conversations and sometimes admit we might be wrong. You know, anytime we get new information in or maybe a little bit of information from somebody else, it should somehow adjust or add to what your thoughts are. And that's kind of the purpose of the show. Mm-hmm. We give and we take.
It's what being open-minded means.
Yeah.
I reckon.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. So we're going to close out the show having the conversation about, I'd kind of like to bring this back to shared revenue. And I know that sounds weird, but I do believe that the towns that are looking for the help via this bill, it chances are has to do with the fact that they don't have the money to do it.
Mm-hmm.
The annexing has to do with as the property owners sell off towards a higher price tag, which they have the right to do right? Any landowner, if we were having the opposite conversation, we'd be screaming about that.
Right.
You should be able to sell your land to the highest bidder. The planning that goes on in any city, county, whatnot, there's a lot of forethought going on. Mm-hmm. It has to do with infrastructure. It has to do with density. It has to do with everything. So if a town is trying to say, don't tell us what to do, and at the same time they're saying, don't take our land away and give us water, really I hear that as they're afraid of the land going away, which is a reduction in revenue to them.
It is.
It's a reduction in property, and it may happen 20 acres at a time. That doesn't seem like a lot, but if it never stops happening, that has its effect. So how do these little towns which are trying to keep the roads updated, you know, where are they getting their funding and what's going on at the city or at the towns? And does that relate back into last year's conversation of the shared revenue, where some was given, but on a $7 billion excess, it wasn't much. It really wasn't much.
Well, and I think the tax, the shared revenue that came back was proportional to what those communities were paying in. And I could be wrong on that, but I know if I look at the city of De Pere, Appleton got probably four times what we got. Green Bay got, you know, eight times what we got in De Pere. But then again, it was also based on the revenue we generate, you know, the size of our tax base and things like that. So I think it was proportional, which I can appreciate from a town side going, okay, we want to do some stuff, but we don't have a huge tax base.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of development going on because a lot of these towns are smaller, right?
I think rural, the biggest increases, the percentage-wise, percentage-wise, the biggest winners of the shared revenue change, not dollars-wise, but right, percentage increase-wise, were the small towns.
They were.
And probably rightly so. But you have to question then, what's the pluses and minuses? Again, your independence, it costs money to be independent.
It does.
It does. And there's an awful lot of argument, a lot of conversations about fix our roads. And a lot of those are coming from the rural areas.
Yeah.
Well, the rural areas are the ones that have the town trucks, right? So is that appropriate? Should it actually be? You know, what's the value of being a town? I don't know that.
I don't either, unless it's just having that more rural feel, community, that mm-hmm. type of stuff.
Yeah.
But then there's a cost to being that way as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely a cost to being that way. And I don't think they can have it both ways.
No,
I don't think
they can
ask Big Brother to start providing big city benefits at the same time you lock them out and say, don't tread on us.
Yeah.
You can't have it both ways.
No.
You either want Big Brother to be involved and you share that expense because services are now being provided and maintained, mm-hmm. or you don't.
And we share. I might have this wrong, and too bad James isn't here. But I believe with the town of Ledgeview, we do have some interceptors and things like that for water and sewer mm-hmm. that are in place that we're kind of a part of.
Mm-hmm.
But there's an agreement to that, and
right.
there's a cost to Ledgeview and maybe even Lawrence for right. those types of things. So if you're a town that doesn't want to participate,
right,
then should you get the benefit?
Right. It's just not what they're proposing isn't right. It isn't
correct.
Right to say we just want a piece of the action and we're not willing to put skin in the game. And that's really what it is. And that's unfair
sad.
To
that's sad.
Anyone who has already put their skin in the game from a taxpayer. So what we want is for everybody to have clean water. What we want is for everybody to live the life that they're dreaming of without mm-hmm. getting stepped on. But sometimes it's give and take. And we can't always give what we want. I do believe we need to work on the state of Wisconsin's water supply, though.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we should have that right. Listen, we have had fun here today. We hope you are enjoying your weekend. We've enjoyed being here with you. This is Chris Alfheim and the Rational Revolution. Thanks to my guest, Mr. Dean Rash, and the fabulous Kaz O'Shea.
All right.
Come on back
Alrighty.
Next week, guys. See you soon.
Thank you, guys.
Rice Lake's choice for news, talk, and sports. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Enjoying this local program?
Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop.
That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
This is the Buzz of the North. WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC.